Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. And this computer voice.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Sudeikis.
And I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome to AnCast. How are you on this fine Thursday afternoon, Justin?
I'm a little burned out.
Yeah, long week.
Long week. It's just we're finalizing the player. Funimation just sent me this massive hard drive of more content. We're talking a good 300 episodes of new stuff. And, you know, you don't really realize just how much they put out until they send it all to you on a hard drive.
Well, on any given day, I have a box full of whatever they've put out this month sitting on my shelf waiting to be sent out. So I have some idea. But, yeah, getting it all at once must be like, whoa.
I forgot they even licensed half the stuff. Like, My Bride is a Mermaid? They have that? I completely forgot.
I don't even know what that – I mean, okay, to say I don't know what that show is about, well, it's all there in the title.
But, yeah, I think you can guess.
I don't get it. Whatever. That'll be – I'll be interested to see, like, an episode of that just because I – what? Like, okay. That seems like a poorly chosen license. But, hey, I'm not – you know, I'm not here to criticize.
Hey, maybe they got it in package. But, you know, the thing is I have the new player going up. Like, we're in final beta now, so it'll probably be up in a couple days after this gets posted.
Okay.
Cool. But until that new player goes up, I can't post anything. And I've built up this huge library of like hundreds, maybe over 1,000 episodes of stuff. And I can't put any of it online. And it's driving me crazy.
Well, soon enough. Have you been watching anything yourself?
Not really for leisure. I decided to just, you know, spelunk my DVD collection. So I've been going back and watching a bunch of old stuff like went back and watched some Dirty Pair, went back and watched some Project Aiko, got into the Dominion Tank Police a bit. Just, you know, kind of a week where I just want my old comfort foods, if you will.
You could have just stopped there. You just want your old.
Thank you.
That would have worked as a saying. I haven't really been watching much either. I watched some Initial D, which is a fun show, but that's all you can really say about it.
How's the new dub?
It's fine. It's perfectly serviceable. It's a lot better than the old one, the tricked out Tokyo Pop version.
You mean it doesn't have a bunch of bad acid DJ loops replacing the music?
God. Sick drift, bro! Yeah, no, that was really bad. But it's the new one's fine, and the same incredibly cheap CG cars are still there.
Those look bad when it came out.
Yeah, it looked bad when it came out.
Although, 15 years ago.
Like, for whatever reason, I didn't get the first two seasons. I only got that movie and then the first half of the fourth season. So it looks a little bit better than those first episodes, but not by much. CG cars, just, yeah, it doesn't work. But it's still a fun show. Like, I still enjoy watching it. It's basic shonen, you know, racing manga. So nothing really, nothing to complain about. At the same time, nothing to praise. Like, it's
now I'll show you my new technique.
Yeah, just.
What?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, that half of that show is something happens. I would estimate like at least 10 minutes of every episode is a shot of two people standing on a corner going, whoa, like. That most of that show are reaction shots to some dude's awesome drift. It's pretty predictable. Other than that, I'm looking forward to the apparently shitty Nightmare on Elm Street remake.
Yeah, you know, between that and Iron Man 2, it seems like this is the summer of discontent for bad sequels.
I mean, I didn't have a lot of faith. I mean, people may not – well, I've never really expressed it before. I'm actually a big fan of Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, I love that. Yeah, I love that series. It's my favorite 80s horror franchise. I've seen all of them. I think the first one is as close to a classic, you know, sort of a gem of 80s horror as you can get. I've always been a big Freddy Krueger fan. Like, he's my favorite, you know, classic monster. And I didn't think the new one was going to be good because it's the same people who made the Friday the 13th remake – which also wasn't good, but it wasn't terrible. It was just kind of there. And apparently mm-hmm. that's what this is. It's just kind of there. Not only that, it doesn't even... Apparently the remake doesn't even have, like, half of the classic scenes from the first one. Because there's some iconic moments in that first movie, and apparently none of them are in the remake. And it's like, why not? Like, why isn't this in there? I'm going to check it out. This podcast will be up. I'll have seen it out. And by the next show, I'll, you know, mention what I thought of it. But... Yeah, I don't know. If you're gonna remake a classic, and you can't really say like, oh, they're ruining the franchise. Like, most of those Nightmare on Elm Street movies are so goofy and stupid that you can't say they're ruining anything. Like, that was long ruined by the time this came out.
Think it'll be better or worse than Rob Zombie's Halloween?
Oh, it's got to be better than that. Those movies were terrible. Like, I was never a fan of the Halloween franchise to begin with. Those movies are just, ugh, man, you're trying too hard. And I like a lot of Rob Zombie's movies. But if you're going to remake it like a classic, like, do something new, do something fresh, try to have as much of an impact as that original did. You know, I don't have a problem with remakes, but try. But I guess they didn't. But I guess I'll find out. So we had some news this week. It's been a newsworthy week. Most notably, the blog post from Bang Zoom CEO Eric Sherman, who declared that anime is dead.
Well, not yet, but it will be if people don't buy DVDs right now.
Yeah, which is, I understand Bang Zoom's having financial problems. Like, I understand that. Like, that's not news. Funimation. Bang Zoom's been in trouble for, like, 3 years now, 3 or 4 years now. That was a company that was, to my knowledge, propped up by the anime bubble, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, look at their client list. Almost all of their output was for Bandai, who's slowed way down, and Genion. Yeah. And, well, that's not happening anymore.
We know what happened to them. So, yeah, of course they're having problems, and that's a shame. But to say that anime is dead because Bang Zoom is having financial problems... is, I believe, and, you know, Eric Sherman's a nice guy. I've met him a few times. I've interviewed him a couple of times.
Yes,
I still think it's an irresponsible thing to say, because all you're going to do is whip people into a fervor, which he did. And we saw the direct result of that.
We had to deal with the direct result of that.
Yeah, the 48-page, 700 replies. I'm not exaggerating. 700 replies to that on our forums. And it was... probably the most ridiculous outburst of crazy speculating and these long rants from people on here's how you fix the anime industry, and everybody is misinformed. Like, there's so much misinformation out there.
I couldn't tell if people had maybe just heard these figures somewhere, just like somebody had spouted them off somewhere and they were regurgitating them, or if they were just completely making them up.
A lot of it seemed totally made up. Because unless they're reading some... I don't read, like, a lot of other anime forums. Like, I occasionally check out anime on DVD. Sometimes yeah. I'll look at Anime Vice. But I don't go to any of the smaller ones. So I don't know if there's just, like, this hive of speculation out there where there's, like, a thread where nobody knows what they're talking about, but everybody thinks they're the professor in the room. And so all this misinformation and you know, bad facts and basically lies get turned into sort of a gospel truth that people then go out and say, you morons, here's what's really going on with the anime industry. And it has nothing to do with reality. Like, absolutely nothing. It's completely disconnected from even basic facts.
Well, what were some of the most insane things that you read in this thread?
Some of the most insane things. Somebody claimed that anime was a multi-billion-dollar industry in America alone, and that it's not a niche market.
Oh yeah, that's
wrong.
On another planet.
That's totally wrong. That is completely wrong. And I don't blame somebody for being misinformed or thinking that it's still 2005 or whatever. But that was 5 years ago. I don't think anime was ever a multi-billion-dollar industry in America. It was always like half a billion, you know, like at its peak.
Well, if you include merch, and that includes stuff like Dragon Ball and maybe even latter-day Pokemon.
Yeah, if you include
then
all
maybe
of that,
you have like a couple bill.
Yeah, right. But anime is not a multi-billion-dollar empire in America. It is not. And saying that is factually incorrect. Then we had people saying, well, why don't they just put anime in primetime slots on network television? Why don't they just do that? Because they
well,
fucking,
I hadn't thought of that.
Because they fucking can't.
Yeah, I can just picture you know, someone at Funimation and, you know, this guy's head just going, wow, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, holy shit, why didn't we just call up CBS and say, hey, you know that show, 2.5 Men, could you replace that with Full Metal Alchemist? And they're like, sure. Not gonna happen. Doesn't happen. They can't get it on network primetime.
Hell, they can't. They can barely get it on cable.
Right. They can barely get it on cable. Adult Swim runs some stuff. That's it. And Sci-Fi. That's pretty much it. That's where it. That's where it goes. That's where it belongs. That's where it exists. That's the only place it's ever really found a home. And then there's the. Why don't they just start a 24-hour basic cable channel that's all anime? Again. Because they fucking can't. Like, the money's...
Having started a 24-hour basic cable channel, I can say that is an indescribably bad idea.
Yeah, you're not going to make any money. And, again, it's sort of divorced from reality. And, you know what? Again, like, it's fine that, these people, like, they think that. They think that that's a viable solution or whatever. But even being somewhat informed, like, a little informed about the money, would go a long way. I think towards fixing these problems, but and I wanted to posit this. A big part of that thread was the ye old fan sub debate, whether or not fan subs help or hurt the industry, and whether or not they're good for business or not. That plus the industry health chat, plus the here's how to fix things chat. It seems to me that fandom, at least in regards to the problems the industry has, how to fix it, and whether or not fan subs are a positive or a negative, it has become exactly like partisan politics. That's how it gets discussed. And as someone who watches a lot of cable news, partisan politics, when they're being discussed by pundits on news shows, facts don't really seem to matter that much. You can have your own facts, and so long as those facts support your conclusion or whatever your partisan objective is, you can basically make shit up. You know, listening to, and you know, speaking as somebody who's biased towards the left, listening to right-wing pundits talk completely out of their ass, making things up, even when there's something factual they can point to, that's what this feels like to me. Like, these people, when they're talking about fan subs don't hurt the industry, they're... The facts they have are wrong. The things they're saying are not true. But they argue it as though this is the fact. This is reality.
So right, and the other side is true as well.
Right.
You know, that there we can't say unequivocally fan subs hurt the industry. We can't say unequivocally that they do hurt the industry.
Right.
It's a really detailed, nuanced issue. No one really has the patience for that. People have their opinions, and they will find whatever – they will mentally filter out whatever facts and half-truths that support their opinion, and they're really not willing to listen to much of anything else.
Yeah, it's the pretense that we're having a discussion, I think, is the problem here. It's not a discussion. And the as is evidenced by the fact that someone will come in, spout their partisan nonsense, and exit the thread. They didn't
or exit the forum. Some people are just registering to post this one screed that is, you know, this sort of ideas that were bandied around 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And leave, never to be seen again.
Right. They didn't read anything that came before what they wrote, and they're not reading anything after what they wrote.
And to be fair, I don't think I couldn't troll through the, was it 48 pages now?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not reading that, especially because most of it is bullshit.
Right, but if you're going to come in with the pretense of, okay, you idiots, listen up. Here's how to fix things. And you spout your partisan bullshit, and then you walk away. Like, just don't bother. Just don't bother. Like, nobody's going to listen to you anyway. Everybody's just talking to hear themselves talk. And this is a problem I don't think certainly we're not going to fix. But no,
that's the internet. That is... people.
Right, exactly. I mean, like, go to Huffington Post and just glance at the comments and tell me that any given story on Huffington Post, it doesn't remind you a little bit of the way anime fans talk about the problems the industry's facing and the issue of fan subs. It's very similar, you know?
Yep. It's the same thing on any big news story that gets posted by one of the big partisan aggregators. Like, my favorite is when Deadline Hollywood Daily gets linked to by Drudge, And then they get like 500 comments of blaming Hollywood and the liberal elites.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of shit.
And I'm just like, this is an industry insider thing. We're talking about inside baseball here, not how evil Hollywood is. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. That's exactly how it is. And I guess that must be what happened here. These people generally only pop up when there's an industry thread. They don't comment on anything else. I don't ever see them in the anime forum. They don't ever seem to talk about anime itself. They just have their certain set of beliefs and quote unquote fixes to the problems the industry is having. And they preach the same thing in every thread. And that's about as close to being a political pundit as I think you can get.
Yeah.
You know, the parallels are just kind of staggering. One of the big problems with anime with this is that these people don't have a place to go to that is a monolithic source of truth. There is no source for them. They don't have access to VideoScan. The industry doesn't talk unless they're promoting something. So where can they get the facts from? I mean, we try, but even we can't say everything that we know.
Yeah, we are hamstrung more often than not by our personal confidences.
Yeah, we can't, like, here's the problem, and I'll just straight up say this. This is pretty much what happens often. We will go to drinks with our friend who works at anime company C. That person over drinks will say, oh man, this show, we expected it to sell 5,000 units. It only sold 2,300 units. It's a failure in our eyes. Like, you know, what do we do now? And then when there's a forums thread about that show, and someone goes, man, this show was a big hit. And we say, no, it wasn't. And they go, well, yeah, it was. If I say, no, it wasn't, it sold half what they expected it to. Guess whose trust I just betrayed?
Yeah, I guess who won't get anything going forward.
Yeah, guess who's not going to get any information going forward. And so that's a really crappy, vicious circle, because we know, but we can't say. And yet we complain that people are uninformed.
You know, and to the anime companies, that doesn't matter so much, or at least it didn't used to. When I was at CPM, we had a very strict rule when we did any outside communication with the public at large, which was basically no numbers, and all of our products are our babies. We love them equally. Those were the two rules. No numbers meant we couldn't talk about how anything sold. We can give maybe a rough idea of this underperformed, this overperformed, but we can't say this sold, you know, this sold 20 units.
Right.
And we couldn't even say, you know, how many people worked for us, because we were trying to maintain an illusion of being more important than we were. For the anime company, it doesn't really have any benefit to people knowing that X show tanked. There is really no benefit to that.
There isn't. But at the same time, when your audience is endlessly and desperately and to no end speculating about the health of your business and telling you how to fix your problems, giving them a little bit of knowledge might go a long way. Or just you know, I don't know. But I guess they can. I guess that just to their bottom line just means nothing if their fans are completely uninformed, you know, pundits.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you were Funimation and you really wanted, and there were fans that, you know, are going nuts over Big Windup, say, does it do you any good to tell the fans just how badly it tanked when the fans tell you that you're lying and it sold really well and you just hate baseball?
If you don't want to be constantly called a liar or constantly get hate mail from people, maybe. I mean, at what point does it benefit the conversation to just tone it down and just tell people, no, guys, here's the truth, you know? The minute that Funimation said Big Windup was a failure on our podcast, suddenly everybody was informed about that. And so suddenly people stopped saying, why don't they license Touch? Now people don't say that anymore. They say, oh, well, I guess it doesn't work here.
That's true. There is a big tradition in this industry because in media, anime is definitely unlike any other piece of the industry in that it has pretty much constant one-on-one contact with its consumers.
Yeah.
That's pretty unique. But because a lot of it there, and I kind of blame this partially on the I'm better than you fanboy bluster of some of the people working in the business in years past, there has been a huge propensity to keep the fans at arm's length.
Yeah.
Now, part of that is totally deserved.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, there was this great story, I think it was Jerry Chu when he was working at Bandai. He literally caught a guy from the anime on DVD forums going rifling through his bag while he was on stage.
Jesus. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. It's not, you can't let him in too much, but when you have 50 pages of people screaming about how the industry's going to die, everything's a failure, maybe somebody could come in and say, hey guys, it's not that bad. Here's why. This sold really well. That sold really well. You know, like, give them something. Something. Just a little bit. You know? And maybe that would help curb this. Like, you know, with politics, you can actually point to a piece of legislation. You can point to something somebody said. You can point to facts. You can point to things that actually occurred. Things people actually said. With anime, there's nothing stopping it. It's just rampant speculation. You know? And that combined with the average ego of your, you know, your internet commenter who's going to put 100% faith in his beliefs rather than the facts, you know, it's a toxic combination. So you have people just making shit up and then preaching it as its truth. And they, you can't really point to them and say to them, like, no, that's not true. Because here's why. Because here's the video scan numbers. Because here's here's a representative from company A saying this. You know, that source of information, those facts are not out there. And like, as we said, that's partially our fault.
Well, I mean, it's a tough line. I mean, some of the big questions that I have been asked personally by our readers, I have literally gone to the licensors that I know people at and say, hey, what's up with this? And they've told me, and I can't, but then they said, but don't tell people that.
Yeah.
Like, well, fuck.
What are we supposed to do? It's really a rock and a hard place. I don't see an end to it anytime soon, but it would be really great if every now and then, you know, it wasn't such a huge deal when a company said, well, that show didn't sell very well on a podcast. You know, not that I expect people to talk about their failures, because the failures are not that important.
Well, not only you don't want to talk about your failures, you want people to think you succeed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, no business and no individual wants the perception of them being a failure.
Yeah, that's exactly true. And that's not necessarily the goal. It's just to talk about the negative stuff. Even talk about the positive stuff. Talk about what's a hit, what's working, you know?
Let's be honest, there have been minor hits, but there haven't been any huge ones
lately.
No,
there haven't, but at least mention the shows that are doing well.
Right.
You know, if you're having an industry panel, make part of the panel, hey, here's what's doing really well. Thanks for supporting this show, guys. You know? What would be wrong with that?
Yeah.
That never happens. And it would give people an idea of what's doing well. And that would be good. So, hey, there's a suggestion. So speaking of rampant wild speculation, you know the V for Vendetta Evangelion guy, right?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Kind of hard not to know that guy. He did a 90-minute interview, I'm going to put interview in quotes, with Tiffany Grant, the voice actress for Asuka in the original Evangelion dub.
Did you sit through that?
No.
I could make out a word, and I bailed after a minute or so.
It's a guy in a goofy costume interviewing a voice actress who is chowing down on a salad during the interview. The subtitles are white and unreadable because they're over white. You know, that guy, you know, bless him and his quirky enthusiasm. But he wrote up a press release promoting this interview that he got, and it wound up on our press releases section. I don't really know how that happened. I guess somebody decided it was newsworthy, which is fine. Normally we don't, post press releases for, you know, content on fan sites, but whatever. For whatever reason, it showed up. And it started a forum thread where I guess this guy is like the enemy of some other Evangelion forum. Like, they don't like him. It's literally avageeks.org versus this guy.
He can be a little acerbic. I can understand him ruffling some feathers.
Yeah, right. Well, I just think it's hilarious that there's still these,
it is hilarious.
These old school nerd fights, and one of them is a guy in a costume. Okay. But all that aside, he really did want to know if we thought that there was a chance that something similar could happen to Evangelion 2.0 as happened to End of Evangelion, which, as I'm sure you remember, you know, like 6 years ago, Manga Entertainment swooped in and snagged the rights to End of Evangelion out from under ADV. And he wanted to know if there's a chance something similar could happen to Evangelion 2.0.
I suppose anything's possible, but...
Well, the answer is no.
No.
Because this isn't 2004, there are no other... There's approximately one company with the resources necessary to produce that film for American audiences, to put it out there, and that's Funimation. No one else is going to swoop in and get it, no one else has the money, no one else has the resources... The circumstances are completely different now. So to the V guy, no, that's not going to happen. If it gets released here, it'll be by Funimation. I think we can say that pretty much unequivocally.
Yeah, and the one way we can tell is by looking at what happened eventually for the first release. First, it got a Blu-ray. It got a theatrical run, which... I'm not supposed to know this, but no one knows where I got this from, so I can say it.
Yeah.
This was actually a stipulation by the licensor. By the way, V kept citing Gainax as the licensor. Gainax has nothing to do with these new movies at all.
Right.
Produced by Studio Kara, but the licensor is NTV, Nippon Teleby. NTV insisted that 1.0 have a theatrical run. And Funimation, not having done a theatrical run in a while, they ended up outsourcing that to another company just to do it. Originally, they wanted 1,000 theaters. They wanted 1,000 prints out there. And, yeah, that's very silly. Eventually, and you know, that's why it took so long for the first one to get licensed, because they had to come down from that a little. And they eventually settled on what happened, and... I believe it ended up doing fairly well, and everyone was moderately happy. For subsequent releases, what's going to matter most to that licensor is probably consistency. They're going to want to match what they did before, both in terms of the production of the dub, the production of the Blu-rays and DVD, and the theatrical run.
Right.
Now, whether Funimation thinks it's worth the money to do another theatrical run... Questionable, certainly. I don't think theatrically it did all that well.
No.
But if that's what they have to do and they really, really want it and the price is in line, I'm sure they'll do it again.
Right, but there isn't another company out there that's going to do it. And I think part of it is that he got, like, Tiffany Grant, I guess, at some point suggested that Section 23 might swoop in and take it. I guess she suggested this at like some fan panel at a convention, which she's just throwing that out there as red meat for the fans in the room.
Of course she wants that to happen. She loves being Asuka, and you know, she's married to Matt Greenfield. Of course she wants that to happen.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not going to happen. Section 23 doesn't have that kind of money. And so, you know, understand that she's playing to the fans in the room. It's not... They can't afford that license, and so there you go.
They definitely couldn't afford to do a theatrical run.
Yeah, exactly. They're focusing on their small, you know, they're focusing on the game that they can currently play and be successful at. And a gigantic, expensive license like Evangelion 2.0 is not part of that game plan. So there you go. Okay, well, I think that about does it for us. Let's go ahead and get to the guest.
Yep. So, joining us this week is chief designer for Media Blasters, and she's been there, got over 10 years now, is Meredith Mulroney.
My whole life.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us, you've been there, wow, probably as long as almost anyone's been at an anime company these days. Tell us what you do there and how your job has evolved over the years.
Well, I started as a freelancer when I was in college, as a junior. And I very quickly eliminated the other designers because I cost less. I'd like to say it was because of skill, but it's not. After literally the day I graduated, I took my stuff from my dorm room, dumped my computer in the office because I didn't trust people to get me a good enough computer, and I was working there the next day. I'd like to say I had a lot of guidance, but the person who was in charge of production left the day I went full-time.
Was that Sam Leibowitz?
Yeah, it would be Sam. So I kind of, you know, went from being a student to, here you go, figure out how to run this. By the way, here's Kenshin. So we, you know, I went from being a freelancer to having to figure out how to run a design department, all two of us, and output products for, you know, the professional world. Thankfully, I didn't have a very high bar to jump over, because aside from AD Vision doing good covers, most people's covers sucked.
So, that is true.
As long as I was as good as everybody else's stuff, nobody really noticed how, let's say, inexperienced I was. And my early stuff is pretty rough.
What are some of the ones that you're proud of, and what would you do over if you could?
Well, I've done most of them over now at this point because of all the repackaging.
Right.
I could deal with not redoing Kenshin an eighth time, but that'll probably happen again. The first round of Kenshin was pretty bad because at first I really didn't like Kenshin at all. I wasn't giving it a fair shake. And eventually I came around to love it, and I looked back on the experience and like, ugh, I should have kind of, you know, given it a little more affection. Though in my defense, dealing with the Japanese on that product was really, really rough. There were times where I was just scanning textures and stuff for the backgrounds, and Aniplex came back and said, you can't have that in the background. You have a Buddha in the background. Kenshin doesn't believe in Buddha. And I went, what? He's a cartoon character. I don't think he believes in anything. So I scanned some Laminé bottles, and I put those in the background, and they were fine.
Because Kenshin drinks Laminé.
Because Kenshin drinks Laminé. I mean, granted, I skewed them a bit, but yeah, they're Laminé bottles. And you totally couldn't read the text on the back. The more I fought with Sony, the worse it got. So I tried to make up with it when I did the box sets, which had their own problems, but at least it was a cleaner, nicer-looking design. I said, I've redone every project 10,000 times, so it's kind of hard to look back. Every one of them is great when I start it, and I'm cursing a blue streak by the end. Like Voltron.
Well, you've done how many Voltron SKUs now?
I've done 49 pieces of art for Voltron, and I've done, that's like 6 pieces of art per sleeve. There's 8, no wait, how many are there? There's 5 lions, 3 vehicle teams, 2 lion force, and a partridge and a pear tree. And we just keep, people keep buying it, so I keep repackaging it. Voltrons you can actually watch, but.
Yeah. You get a bunch of really old stuff at Media Blasters over the years, and I remember when I was dealing with the really old stuff at CPM, a lot of the artwork would come on these really horribly dirty and grainy 35mm chromes.
Oh yeah, I had to redraw all that stuff.
So you redraw a lot of artwork.
I redrew all of Ray Earth. I didn't redraw Kenshin. Kenshin actually was perfect. Kenshin then gave me digital files. But all of Ray Earth, East came with no art. Most of the small OVAs came with no art. The kiddie titles had to have bras and panties drawn on them. That's perfect, actually perfect. Why they hired me, is because I could draw bras and panties.
Joy.
Yeah, wake up Aria. It was good stuff.
Now, as the years have gone by, your role has increased into... tell us about the game that you work on.
Yeah, John kind of keeps putting me in all sorts of different places. It's almost like a contest. Like, can you do this? And I went, okay. So I work on our online card game now. He's like, design a website. And I went, oh, okay. So I designed the first Altiel website, which wasn't so great. And so I designed the second Altiel website, which is a little bit better. Like, you can actually get from point A to point B, which was a pretty significant change. There's information on it. It's updated, unlike the Media Blaster site. Which I did not.
What's up with that?
It's just not enough manpower to do it. Because each one of us does like 10 things. You know, someone in sales is updating it. I was never updating it. I have to admit that I worked as hard as I could to not have to deal with it. I was like, I could do this, or I could do Giant Robo. It really wasn't a very an arm twisting or anything like that. It's like, you do this, yeah, you designer. I felt bad. It was my friend. I was like, you should do it. It'll be a great experience redesigning the website. I'm gonna go work on Invader Zim.
So what you've somehow, I don't know how you have done this, but somehow working in anime as long as you have, you still enjoy it.
Sometimes.
Well, the content you seem to still enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, I've been bitter, and then I've been elitist, and then I've been goofy. I've kind of gone through like the whole ring of things, but I've always dug animation. Like, my uncle is an animation director, so he kind of always kept me attached to the art of it. So, of course, I mean, there's tons of crap, but even every once in a while, a crappy title has something about it that I might find interesting, and at least I'll watch it. There's always something of somebody's hand that stands out interesting. I mean, God, I started rewatching G.I. Joe, and I'm watching the opening, and I went, holy Christ, like, the little flicks of animators', you know, intentions is there. Like, how did I never notice that? Of course, it was G.I. Joe, and I didn't really care, but I don't know. I always look into things in a different way, and I was like, well, yeah, the story and crap are kind of crap, but there's other qualities to it that I enjoy. I mean, there's things I don't enjoy at all, like Genma Wars.
Nobody enjoyed Genma Wars.
That's awful.
You somehow... I think you are the only person on the planet that actually likes Apocalypse Zero.
I am, and I was so proud to work on that comic, I can't even tell you. The irreverence with which it is drawn is amazing. The fact that you can maintain something so serious and something absolutely ridiculous and over the top at the same time, I wish I had thought that up. I'm jealous of the person who can come up with that stuff, who's crazy enough to come up with such absolute lunacy. I mean, you can tell he loves what he does, even though it's hideous. I own a number of Apocalypse Zero cells. I'm very proud of them. They cost a dollar.
For those who have never seen Apocalypse Zero, it's basically... the highlight of the first episode is when a 200-foot-tall, obese woman in wearing nothing but a furry spiked bikini bottom squeezes a guy like a tube of toothpaste.
Well, she also rips his face off and staples it to her nipples, but, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I don't expect most people to enjoy that. But, you know me, I like a potpourri of very strange things.
And you've been around hentai long enough to completely, totally make you not offendable.
You know that's not true. One of our titles I walked in on maybe a month ago, and I went, sweet Christ, what the hell is wrong with Japan?
What was it?
That was a bondage game. That was really horrible. It was really, really horrible. I remember seeing a picture of the Japanese sleeve. I'm like, is that a diaper with poop in it? Oh, my God.
Well.
Yeah, and I'm glad I didn't have to work on it.
Hold on. Sells real well. Bondage game.
You're looking it up.
No, I'm not. Kidding. all right, so from your vantage point, how have things changed over the years? I mean, obviously you've been there since the VHS era, so late VHS era.
Well, you certainly can't get as much out of a skew anymore. You know, you can't compare what a title does today as opposed to, like, Kite, which had a sub, a dub, regular, then a sub and a dub adult, and then a DVD regular, and then a DVD adult, and then a DVD uncut, and then a DVD this way. Like, you got so much more out of a title, and people actually wanted it. If anything, and I know you've seen this, anime's become less precious to people. It's become really like a throwaway medium. I mean, collectors all grow up, and maybe you'll see a resurgence once the current generation of fans hits, like, 25 and realizes, hey, I want to go back and watch X, Y, and Z. But the volume and speed with which people go through things now, there's no time for anything to be worthwhile owning. I found myself going back and buying older stuff, and I'm like, well, I know everything's going to come out here eventually, so I don't have to rush to watch the newest thing. But damn, I realized I didn't have Eureka 7, so I just went and bought Eureka 7.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, do you think that's because fans are younger, or because it's just the stuff that they're making these days is just more transient?
Maybe a little bit of both. Because certainly going back and looking at things that I used to love, I was like, yay, Detonator Oregon! Then I go back and I went, oh, Detonator Oregon. Well, he still looks cool, you know. But, yeah, it was complete, you know, fluff. But
even with music by Susumu Hirasawa, that show sucked.
Yeah, but he had a cool robot. You know, I'm a sucker for a cool robot. But, yeah, that actually was my introduction to Hirasawa, by the way. I was, I guess, in junior high when I found anime. And I certainly didn't buy it until high school because I didn't have the money. But even more than that, I mean, 13 and 14-year-olds don't buy content. They just watch it. They buy things to put content on. So having a younger fan base is one problem. But two, it's become so easy to get, whereas for you and me, it was difficult and it was precious. And like, it was really, you had to work at it and you had to have a friend or something to buy it. Now you don't have to have a friend. You can be, you know, a lonely weirdo in your house and sit there and watch anime until the sun goes down and never see another human being. We like to talk about it. We like to discuss things. I mean, it was a very different social climate, too. I'd like to say that there was more quality stuff back then, but I think it was just, even if it wasn't quality, it was a little more interesting and weird. They don't take as many chances as they used to. They don't make as strange as shows. Like, you're certainly not going to get Take the X Train anymore. Or if they do, it's super, super artsy, pop culture-y stuff and not just experimental.
Right. It'll have some merchandising tie-in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, look at, like, Dead Leaves. Dead Leaves is probably the closest thing you're going to get to something really strange that's come out. At least it's popping into my head. But at the same time, it's very sellable because it's very pop art.
Right. Now, do you think just fans' tastes have changed at all? I mean, because it used to be we got a whole bunch of mech shows, and those used to do pretty well in the American market, didn't they?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it didn't matter what you got, because, again, it was a matter of, you know, you could get everything, but certainly more sci-fi fans found stuff first. I know I had Gundam Zeta completely untranslated in college, and all my friends and I watched it completely happy and retarded, regardless of the fact that later when I watched it subtitled, I went, oh, it's not as good as I thought, but it looked really cool. You know, I don't think even now, if you know, Zeta came out in a box set, I don't know for sure, but I don't think it did particularly well. No, I don't know what weird disconnect is between people not wanting robot shows and such. You know I do, but that's, you know, my personal bias.
Right. You were probably the world's biggest cheerleader for Gao Gai Gar.
I am, and I don't get how something can be so popular in Japan for so many years and just people not get it here, especially if you grew up watching Voltron, because I remember Voltron being awesome, and then when I went back and watched it again and I realized it sucked, I was really heartbroken.
Maybe that's why.
And then
why.
When I watched Gao Geiger, I was like, wow, this is everything I remember Voltron being, and wasn't. I mean, it was awesome when I was in second grade, but yeah, Voltron doesn't hold up so hot.
Right. Yeah.
I've noticed. The other hand is horrible.
What was that?
Go Lion. I haven't actually, being that even though I worked on it, like, I watched people coming out of the screening room saying things like, the sky was just raining blood, and the blood caught on fire, and people were running around burning. I was like, this is a kid's show?
Only in Japan.
Only in Japan, yeah. Disconnect.
Was there something that Media Blasters released, and you were like, oh, this is going to tank. What were you thinking, John? And it came out, and it actually did pretty well.
Night Hunters. Yeah. It's still my heart. Night Hunters is... I understand why people, like, girls wanted the art books and stuff, but it's not like the show looked like the art books. I mean, there were shots where you could see Doga.
Where you could... you're going to have to explain what that is.
Well, the pencil drawings. You could see, like, they accidentally shot the pencil drawing instead of a cell.
What?
Yeah.
That show was so terrible.
Yes. Yes, it was. And you know what? It tastes mean nothing. On the other hand, while I'm not a fan of it, the second season of Mindhunters, which production-wise, pacing-wise, and, you know, please forgive me, even story-wise, is infinitely superior, didn't do as well. It did well. But, I mean, it's like, you know, a drooling idiot cousin and a guy who wears Prada. Nobody wants the Prada guy. They want the drooling idiot cousin.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember back in the day we showed, that was one of the tail end of VHS fan subs that was coming out, and we would show it at my college anime club, or rather, we screened it before we showed it at the actual anime club screening. We were like, holy shit, like, this is terrible. Well, let's show it anyway, you know, girls will show up for the pretty boys. And lo, they did, but we also packed a screening room full of people laughing at how ridiculously bad the show was, and it turned into one of our most popular shows, not because it was good. Specifically because it was so mockably terrible.
I still can't watch it. I can't watch it. I don't want to watch it. There are plenty of things, like, you know what sells forever? Mouse. I looked at it and I'm like, this is not good by most human being standards, but it doesn't matter because it has big boobs and people love it. That's it. Boobs. Boobs and samurais. And people are happy. Whereas I want robots and quality animation. No. No, no, I'm in the minority. I'm the loud screaming crazy woman.
Yeah, you guys, one of your biggest hits in recent years was Aiken, wasn't it?
Ugh. the editor who had to do the trailer for that quit. If you watch the trailer, he put in some text that says, "Oh, Lord, Mother, please forgive me." I mean, it's...
That got out?
Oh, yeah. We couldn't have helped it sell. I mean, I'm not going to complain about people buying stuff because they buy stuff, they buy what they like. And you know what? Everyone's tastes are different. I should not criticize anybody's taste because I like Sentai. There. Like, how can I possibly criticize somebody for liking giant boobs and cheesy garbage when I like Sentai?
Aiken has a special place in hell, though. Like, you can criticize, I mean, not necessarily criticizing someone's taste. That is universally reviled. Like, people watch it ironically. You know, it's not like there's a vast swath of people out there honestly buying and enjoying Aiken. They're buying it ironically. They're watching with their friends ironically. Like, it's kind of like Night Hunters, although...
No, that's you and me watching it ironically, because I know I've shown it at my Christmas parties. But yeah, but there are people who really, 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 really like giant boobs, and it makes them so happy. And like I said, go them, because they buy it, and I still have a job. So there's like a fine line between me selling job. Like, if I have two things in front of me, so let's say one of them is Queen's Blade, and one of them is, say, Gear Fighter Deno. Which one do you think I want, but which one do you think I'm going to tell John is the right thing to get?
You're going to go with the giant udders.
Yeah. Yeah. I know boobs sell. Everybody likes boobs.
Yikes. So, are you guys still producing dubs?
Yeah.
For the boob shows?
For the boob shows. Though we're just finishing up dubbing Dokoro-chan for the special edition. We got a crap ton of extras after the fact. And we're like, oh, thanks. So we're going to put that out with all the extras and a dub. But really, dubbing didn't make a huge difference at all in DVD sales. What it made
really?
A difference on... Yeah, it really... I'd like, you know, Loveless sold really, really well. Really well. But dubs seem to make a bigger difference for online. So... Xbox, you got to have a dub. PSN, you have to have a dub. You know, people almost don't really care as much anymore because so many of the fan subs are just, you know, sub. They just want to watch stuff. But for any of the download to own content, people want dubs. I don't want dubs, but that's just me.
Right. I'm sorry. I just heard meowing.
that's Toji.
Are the stuff that you're dubbing now, who's dubbing that for you?
Bang Zoom is doing Dokoro-chan, and we just sent them Death Kappa. And hi, Toji. Yeah. All right. And who did CanoCon? I think Arvintel did CanoCon, but really, I don't think there's enough dubbing work because we keep seeing all the major LA actors and all the dubs, regardless of where they go. There's just so little stuff being dubbed now that, you know, people are just looking for work. I think the most consistent thing being dubbed right now is Pokemon. Yeah, well, yeah, it's TV.
Yep.
I can't think what we're not dubbing Zetsubou Sensei, but even if they wanted it, like, you just can't dub that. The jokes don't make any sense. Some things are
all puns.
Yeah, so that's one I just, even if you dubbed it, I just don't think it would, it just wouldn't roll. It would lose so much of its flavor.
Yeah, that's true. So you guys have just started on Blu-ray as well, right?
Yeah, what did we just finish up? Mostly it was our live action stuff. Versus is currently making everyone's life hell. Ichi the Killer. One of the problems we have is getting the materials. Making sure that we actually have a real HD master as opposed to an upconvert.
Oh, yeah. Also, Japan sell you HD masters and they said, here's our HD master, and it's just a bad upscale?
No. When they actually make HD masters, they make real HD masters. Though I think Machine Girl was debatable. But they're really not interested. I mean, we're running into a problem where they're just not interested in doing their older shows. And if they are, we have to wait for them to release it. So, like, we're going to do it eventually, but you have to wait and then wait 6 months so we can get our, you know, they still get high price points, which makes things awesome. So we're like, we're looking for materials for, well, as you know, Lotus War. And much like Project Echo, they seem to think that Lotus War wasn't worth keeping and threw out all the prints.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So all you have is the existing transfer.
Yeah. Which, I mean, we're going through the rounds of, I think Sean was up to the point of seeing if they can mask out each scene and properly restore each scene. But, you know, there's only so much you can do. And the same thing with Overfiend. We're trying to track down a print of that. We knew of, like, several different prints, and we're trying to get our hands on them because God knows that I want a Blu-ray of Overfiend.
Oh, yes, of course.
It's one of the first hentais I ever saw, like everybody else.
Right. Do you see, you just came out with the first Blu-rays. Oh, that's right. Nobody knows about Death Kappa. Can you tell us a little bit about Death Kappa?
Death Kappa is awesome. So anyone who's seen our films knows that what we do is we find awesome, crazy people in Japan and we say, you want to make a movie? And we determine how crazy they are. And we're like, great, here's a pile of money. Go make the film you always wanted to make. And then we got Machine Girl, which was an international success that nobody could have possibly imagined. And then a bunch of people who worked on that said, well, we want to make a film now. And we're like, well, are you crazy enough? And they made Tokyo Gore Police, which was also a huge success. And the next guy said, I want to make a kaiju movie. They went, huh? Okay. And he's like, I've already made the costume and I've already built the models. We went, oh, that qualifies as crazy enough. Here's the money. And he went ahead and made a 50s style, totally corny, awesome kaiju movie that I couldn't have imagined until I saw it. It doesn't take itself seriously for a second. It is completely fun. And you know that
Anno in it?
Yes, Anno is in it. He plays a member of a defunct World War II resistance group that makes fish people for the pride of Japan. He dies for like 45 seconds.
That sounds suspiciously close to Blood Waters of Dr. Z.
There's a lot of referencing and a lot of like chins up and stuff to other kaiju films. These guys love this shit. They love it. They love making it. And you can tell. They absolutely had a complete blast making it. Which is why so far... cross my fingers, the films have come out to be at least, you know, a good ride. You can sit down and enjoy them. I was worried about Death Cop. I was like, with our budget, I don't know what you're going to get. And what we got was awesome.
Cool. So, when does that come out?
June, I think. June or July, I believe. And it's going to have Japan's going to have a different ending than we are. Japan's doing a full theatrical. And they'll have their ending and we have our ending and then eventually probably will release that ending. But it's definitely, I don't think it's going to disappoint anybody.
Is there a place online people can see the trailer?
I think it's on our YouTube channel. Most of the, I think it's just posted on YouTube right now, on the Media Blasters channel. You can see how much connection I have with the video department, even though they're right down the hall.
So the big question that pretty much most of our listeners probably want to know, and are probably waiting for us to get around to this, how is Media Blasters doing? Because all we really hear about are layoffs and delays and all that kind of stuff. And so how are you doing? What's the mood like down there?
I mean, it sucks. It's, you know, the retailers really kind of kicked us in the face, and all you can do is cut back and do what you can do to wait for them to pick up again.
By kicked in the face, you mean they basically sent you back a tremendous amount of product, right?
Even beyond that. I mean, product always comes back, especially in February. It's just the cycle of things. They just stopped ordering. I don't know what they were thinking, because, I mean, when things get rough, collectors still spend money. So why would you cut the collector's market out of your stores? But, you know, now what we see is a return of, like, the big stores are cutting us out, but all the small stores bring us back. So, you know, comic book stores pick up, mom and pop stores pick up, which I'm fine with, but it takes a while. So, you know, to get back to where you were, it's never going to be where it was at, like, the middle of the 90s when the market was booming. I don't think that's ever going to return. It's going to be more like the very early 90s when it was just, you know, slowly building. So right now, you know, it's sad. I've watched the company go up and down, but we've been beaten around quite a few times. We just don't make a big stink out of it, but we're still kicking. I said, have you ever known us to be very big on our own promotion?
No.
Good or bad otherwise?
Not at all.
Yeah. You know, there's something to be said for sitting there real quiet. People don't notice you, but people buy our product. We're just not boisterous about it. Turns out everyone who's made a big fanfare about themselves hasn't done too well. So I'm going to say that sticking to being quiet and modest will work.
Yeah, I think with the exception of a few boisterous convention appearances, the newly renamed ADV Section 23 is kind of following your model. They don't talk to anybody about anything. They quietly announce their stuff, they quietly release it, and they seem to be quietly staying in business for the time being. So,
well,
maybe
quite
that's
often people, I didn't know this until recently, a lot of people say, well, Media Blasters is in a unique position. I was like, what? What does that mean? I mean, how do you say that that's a business model? We're in a unique position. Well, they sell to fans. I'm like, okay. Isn't that what everybody's been doing all along? We've never really changed, good, bad, or otherwise. We've never, you know, anime generally sells to anime fans, and while certain things can break out of the mold, like Naruto, it turns out that, you know, that's one title out of how many thousands that come out of Japan. You know that if you release, you know, whatever, Justin, give me something weird that we've released.
Cleopatra DC.
Yeah, you know, we're not expecting that to actually bang on the doors. We're like, if it makes this amount of money, it breaks even, and that's great. And that was a package deal anyway. But, you know, what was it? Idol Pop? Why can't I remember the name of it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, either way, it was another title. Like, if we get an OVA series, we expect it to do X. It's not going to be the next blockbuster. And long as you work within your expectations, you tend to be more successful. You can't expect everything to be huge. Thanks, Toji. Sorry, Toji wants to chime in, too.
That's fine. We've had cats on the show before. Okay, Justin, anything else, or do we want to move on to Twitter?
No, why don't we do Twitter.
Okay. Oh, before we do that, though, anything you want to plug?
To all the guys who like boobs, you should buy Queensblade.
I'm sure they will.
Video department, it's the finest master they have ever seen. They were very upset. Usually videos come with all sorts of little kludges and little problems and issues. Queensblade is flawless.
Of course it is.
Yep. It is flawless in every possible way. And yeah. Take that for what it's worth.
All right, so Twitter, let's see here, from Exodora UK. What's your favorite Go Gaigar toy? And he wants to know about your early days in East Coast New Jersey fandom.
Well, actually, I'm from Long Island, but Go Gaigar toy, which they are all behind me. I'd probably say on the higher end of toys is my Genesic Gaugiger, which is a beautiful, beautiful toy. And for abuse, probably just my base level, like, you know, made for 3-year-olds Gaugiger, because it was like the first one I got. And I'd like to say that I didn't run around the hallways of Otakon playing with it, but I did. It's my early days in fandom. Like I said, I'm from Long Island. I was kind of alone. You know, I don't quite remember. I think it was through my comic book store that I found some of the guys that were at Stony Brook, which then actually connected me to the guys at Rutgers. But for the most part, it was just me kind of watching, you know, U.S. renditions, Guyver and stuff, going, wow, it's really cool. I'm looking for, you know, bootlegs of Oniamis.
Do you still go to cons?
Out of choice or by work?
Either.
I still have to go for work for LTL, but the need for conventions is kind of gone, because I can buy anything I want online, and at this point, there's not that much I buy. Plus, we're right around the corner from Image at work, so if I, like, say in a bad mood, like it was the other day, I can just go around the corner and buy a, you know, $200 Speed Mirage kit to quell my anger. It's so easy. I can get whatever I want now, so I don't need to be at a convention. And I can, you know, I'm all grown up now, so I can drive to my friends.
Yeah, but where else will you find Markdown Volume 5 of Wedding Peach?
If it weren't for cons, I wouldn't have my American disc for Brigadoon. Well, I said only my $600 in Japanese ones.
Oh, God. You are such a huge Brigadoon fan. I still have to see that show.
I'm a Yonatani fan. I like all of his stuff. Hence, Gaugiger, Better Man, Brigadoon, yada, yada, yada.
All the stuff that would move maybe 300 units here.
Yep.
All right. We have roughly 8,000 questions from Andre Paplu. First from him, does Media Blasters plan to include dubs on some of their direct-to-box releases?
If the show is something we can get online, I'm guessing yes.
All right, then. Is there much Media Blasters can do to combat piracy? What would you ask that fans do?
Bazookas? Nothing. If you like a show, it's okay to watch it online and download it, but buy it if you like it. It took me forever, but I just bought Eureka 7. I just bought box sets 3 and 4 of Nana. You know, if you like it, buy it.
A simple yet foreign concept to many. Okay. Does Media Blasters ever see itself leaving the anime market Bang Zoom style?
What does that even mean?
I don't know what that. I think
guns are blazing.
Yeah,
I doubt it. If we left the anime market, that means probably there's not much anime market left. For whether you like the films or not, we kind of have geared ourselves more towards making ourselves a film company. And while we have had plans for animation in, you know, the works, it's, you know, oh, except for Kite, we did Kite, but it's, you know, we've certainly, you know, been a little more hesitant since the market has been poor, and animation is a very, very large investment as opposed to making film. But I don't think we're going to go out of it, you know, with the apocalypse.
Okay. What are your plans for your existing manga projects, and do you plan on continuing the manga line?
I haven't a clue. But if I'm real quiet, then I won't have to do them. They're a lot of work. I spent 3 months retouching Kakugo, Apocalypse Zero.
Oh my God.
And that was purely out of love. And I wanted to put a stick in my eye when I was working on Aiken.
Well, who could blame me there?
I'm still trying to think if I've ever said that title without the response from the other party being, ugh. Okay. Will you be including the English dub songs for the Lotus Wars OVA? And why did you drop the dubbed songs from Rareth?
We did?
According to this guy.
I don't think we did. Because I was making the menus for the new box set, and I'm pretty sure it said English opening on it as an extra. I think they're not in the video stream because they don't sync up.
Right.
The original masters we got were international masters, and they really sucked, and they were cut to hell. So what we have now is, you know, completely clean masters, so that I don't work in video, obviously. Justin could probably tell you what I'm trying to say, but I'm pretty sure that it doesn't line up, but they're going to be there as extras, definitely. And for Lotus, I don't think we're cutting them out. I don't see why we would, unless they're, like, horrible. But even then, I still don't think we'd cut them out.
I think for Ray Earth, at least, he's obviously referring to the Hulu stream. You sort of already addressed this, but just to clarify, does Media Blasters have plans for a new website? Finding information about your licenses and releases is usually a challenge.
John would want me to redo the website. The next website I have got to actually redo is Kitty, and then probably Media Blasters. I would rather someone who's better at web design do them than me.
Oh, yeah. Does the hentai still sell?
Oh, my God. Hentai doesn't get returned. Ever. Ever.
It's because it's soiled.
And, I mean, you've seen the, you know, where Bible Black just, like, doesn't stop. Bible Black is the new Overfiend. It's
wow. People still buy porn.
Oh, yeah. They always buy porn. I mean, it's... The world will just... It's never going to go away. It's... People love porn. Why do you think they like Queensblade?
Right, of course.
I mean, it's as close as... No, Mouse is as close as you can get to porn. But people like erotica.
True.
I don't know. I think we've heard more or less that hentai got hit really hard by the bubble bursting, but I guess for you guys, at least, that's not true. From Crollo, do you have any plans to release live-action Japanese or Korean dramas?
You know... To a degree, we kind of like jumped into the live action market first, and a lot of people have gotten on board. So the market's a little flooded. It's kind of like a repeat of what happened to anime. I really wanted John to get the Gokusen drama because I thought it was great. And boy, oh boy, do I want him to get Sentai. But since I don't have marketing information, I can't tell you. I don't know how well it would do, really. I kind of feel like live action fans have been... somewhat ignored, but that's just my gut feeling.
Well, not to mention all of the Japanese dramas that have any of the Johnny's boys in them, any of the guys from SMAP or V6 or Arashi or any of those guys, which is basically every show.
It makes things really hard, because just because they're big in Japan doesn't mean they're anybody here.
Yeah, I believe if they're on the production committee for those shows, they have like some ridiculous like $25,000 per episode minimum.
Well, also, I mean, look at all the stuff that happened with Densha Otoko. I mean, you can't get it only, if anything, because of the music. They use the Imperial March. it's not going to fly over here. You're going to get in big trouble.
All right. From Ted of Werner, are you planning on re-releasing Invader Zim?
No. When we did well with that, Nickelodeon got really mad. they got real mad. And we weren't trying to get a whole bunch of shows from MTV. And once we were successful with Zim, they just locked us out. They just re-released it. They're like, new on DVD, Invader Zim! Your covers suck. Mine were better, because mine were done by Jonin.
That's true. I did see the new covers, and yours were way better. way better. Okay, from The Digital Bug, recently I found out that the Media Blasters Rareflix store was flooded from a water main break, and I would like to know how soon that store will be reopened.
We've actually had almost all of the Four Horsemen visit us. So we had the water main break, and it literally buckled the cement in the floor.
Holy shit.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It destroyed the foundation. Like, sewage came up all over the place. It was bad. But I think the store is going to open up really, really soon. They got most of that fixed. But today, there was a dumpster fire right by the warehouse. All the sprinklers went off. And then two of our employees were out, and they were deathly ill. So John said today, I'm waiting for the locusts. But hopefully, like, within the next week or so, unless something terrible happened with the sprinkler system, the store should be open soon.
All right. Again, from Andre Popolu, do you have any plans for licensing merchandise or making more merchandise? I know you made Berserk plushies.
Yeah, they did terrible.
Yeah.
People, there's just not enough volume for merchandise. Even though you see everyone at the con with... you know, bags and stuff, it's just too expensive to make and not enough people buy them. I don't know why. They must be buying something if they're not buying DVDs.
Berserk doesn't really seem like it's all that conducive to plushies. That seems weird to me.
That's sort
Are you kidding?
Kind of
the more violent the show, the better the plush.
Oh, right.
I've got one of my coworkers made me a really awesome Zod plush. It's terribly cute.
Excellent.
Okay, from NeoCloud9, what prompted the switch to box set releases, or rather, why did you wait so long to do that?
Internal issues. I mean, we still actually pay for our licenses, so we have to make the money back. But there comes a point where people have changed the market and there's nothing you can do about it. It wasn't a matter of, like, trying to squeeze people for money. It was a matter of really just, you know, to break even, you got to do this. People always forget, like, it's not like a war against consumers, especially since people forget, probably more than any other company, we work hardest to make things the way a collector wants it to be, because we're all collectors. I mean, Justin knows us. We're probably the biggest group of nerds in the business.
It's true, they are.
From Severance, this is Gerald from Anime World Order, and you sort of already answered this, but just to reiterate, did you hate Nighthunters as much as your boss did?
More so. Because at the time, he was like, should I get this? I don't know, it looks bad. And this other show, Berserk, I don't know if it's very good. I was like, oh, please go get Berserk and don't ever get Weisskreuz. Turns out that was one of the ones I was really wrong on. I mean, I could have never imagined how well that did. I was wrong. I admit it. I'm not that...
Okay. From AJM Karate 717. Nope, he's trying to be clever here. what specifically does Media Blasters plan to do differently than its failed competitors in order to succeed? Also, Heat Guy J. Well, there you go. There's your reference. But there's your question.
Not release Heat Guy J, for one. Yo, I love Nobuteru Yuki and all, but please. I don't know. I mean, except the biggest thing that's hurt us isn't been what we put out or how we put things out. It's really been retailers cutting back. So other than looking for new and interesting shows, one of the things I actually said to John the other day was shows like Seirei are few and far between, and shows like Seirei always sell. Like 12 Kingdoms always does well. It continues to do well because it's engrossing and epic.
Seirei, you're talking about Morabito.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. I forgot it's called Morabito. Yeah. All my files say Seirei. It confuses all the printers. Really, just not putting out everything. Like, trying to find either something that's an easy sell, like Queen's Blade, you know, or finding something truly epic that engrosses you. And it's hard, because they don't make it, can't get it.
Right.
Yeah, there hasn't really been anything like that since Morabito, I don't think.
Not that I can think of.
Yeah.
Maybe Beast Player Aaron.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that yet. Okay, from...
That seemed really young, though, I believe.
Yes,
it is. Yeah,
it's the same author, right?
You know, I don't know off the top of my head.
Our listeners will know, and will correct us in the forums.
Yes.
Okay, from Zaruda, this is everybody's favorite guy, Daniel Zelter. Will you have any say or participation in the live-action Voltron if it happens?
Probably not. Usually the extent of our input is, do you want us to put it out on DVD? How much restoration work do you want us to do? Yada, 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 stuff like that. With art, you know, it comes to, I can do whatever I want because there's nothing. That's the only thing I have 100% input on.
Okay. Well, that's it. We're out of Twitter questions now, so thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us in a pinch.
Hey, you know, Justin knows I'm free.
Well, thanks. You totally saved our butts this week.
Not a problem at all.
Okay, well, thanks again. All right, that's our show. I want to thank Meredith for joining us at the last minute. We unfortunately had some real audio problems with our interview with Ben Ettinger of Anapages Daily. Make sure you check out his blog. It's excellent, and we will try to get him back on the show at some point. But as always, subscribe to us on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.